From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 18, entitled Lord Balaram Slays the Demon Pralamba, Text 11. Gopajati Pratichanna Deva. Gopajati Pratichanna Deva Gopala Rupino. Idire Krishna Ramocha Nataiva Natam Nripa Gopi Praticha. Purports, we have to go ahead. Translation. O king, demigods disguise themselves as members of the coward community, and just as dramatic dancers praise another dancer, worship Krishna and Balaram, who are also appearing as coward boys. Text 12. Brahmanair langanai kshepair asphotana vikarshanai chikridatur niyuddena kakapakshadarau kvachit. Translation. Krishna and Balaram played with their coward boyfriends by whirling about, leaping, hurling, slapping and fighting. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would pull the hair on the boys' heads. Purport. The acharyas have explained these words as follows. The word Brahmanai indicates that the boys, pretending they were machines, would sometimes whirl about until they became dizzy. They would also sometimes jump about, langanai. The word Kshepai indicates that sometimes they would hurl objects like balls or stones, and that sometimes they would grab each other by the arms and throw one another about. Asphotana means that sometimes they would slap one another's shoulders or backs. And Vikarshanai indicates they would drag one another about in the midst of their play. By the word Niyuddhena, arm wrestling and other types of friendly fighting are indicated. And the word Kakapakshadharo means that Krishna and Balaram would sometimes grab the hair on the other boys' heads in a playful manner. Gopajati Pratichanna Deva Gopala Rupino Idire Krishna Ramaucha Nata Iva Natam Nripa. Shukadeva Goswami is continuing his narration of the 10th canto, which in one sense is the main purpose for which King Parikshit is so intently sitting before him and listening. Right from the beginning of his narration, he has given him hints in the form of Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Smartavyaschechatha Bhayam. My dear king, Shrotavya, just like we have this word Kartavya, which has to be done, Datavya, which has to be given. So Shrotavya, in the human form of life, it's not an option. You have to do it. Just to give a simple example, a person working in a company, like a scientist working in a research laboratory, his boss may tell him, you have to develop this product, you have to come up with some development. An accountant is told, you have to tally these accounts. A lawyer is told, you have to help me. How does this have to come in the picture? When does a person start beginning to understand that I have to do it? Only when his identity is clear. When a person identifies himself with his particular job, I have to do it. I am employed here. I get my salary. My father worked in the Indian Post and Telegraph. And sometimes, almost every year, in the monsoons, there would be one or two days when people would say that this is Bombay's monsoon. That means all the trains have stopped. Or sometimes in train stations, up to the level of the platform, there is water. And in such a situation, we would tell him, don't go. What's your point in going to office? I remember, one year, he left Borivali, where he used to stay, reached VT station at 12 o'clock. He left at 8. And he just signed his muster and left VT and came back at 6 o'clock. So what was the purpose? But he said, no. As long as I can, I have to show that I am diligent, I am whatever, I am very honest in my duties. Or so there were times, there were people who were trained up like that. And of course, I used to think this is too much. If there is no response for your honesty, no response for your diligence, who cares? But he said, no, you don't do that, but let me behave, you know. So I was just thinking, ordinary postal worker, clerk working in Indian Post and Telegraph, what does he gain by showing such level of honesty to a government department, which gives two hoots, as they say, about all the things which you have done for them? The point we are taking is, it depends on the person, his identification that I am a loyal person, at least in my own inner sense, I should remain true. And many, many years later, when I was reading something about management science, they say, actually, if you get a person like that, you should be very proud. You should be very happy that in your organization, you have people who identify themselves as honest servants. In fact, as Kali Yuga is progressing, things are becoming very, very hazy. I heard in today's job interviews, they don't even ask you whether you'll be loyal to the company. I don't think they have any right to ask even. Because the man who is taking your interview may tomorrow leave and go somewhere else. He might tell you that, you know, we need loyal people here. We need people who give their best to this job. And I don't want slackers. I don't want any. Of course, there is other side to it. We had this devotee here, Hansavatar Prabhu. He said in his company, about 25 people were told that you are fired. Normally, as soon as they come to their desks, they are told that don't start the machine because it is locked and you are all supposed to go to one room. And a person is delegated to tell them that we have made our figures and we can't make much money this year, so you all have to go. It's a thankless task. I don't know whether it has really happened or maybe there is some paraphrasing into it. This man is telling a whole room full of people that you're all fired. By the time he's finished, he gets a memo saying he's fired. Because they did this calculation based on something and now times have changed. So they say even middle level managers have to go. So when you have this kind of understanding, experts say that people tend to leave that loyalty stage, identifying oneself as a caretaker, as a loyal person, too slowly they go to higher and higher negative lens. And at one point they may cross that boundary and may become actually saboteurs, those who may wreck, those who may sell company secrets, those who may damage company's property. We saw about a few months ago in one car manufacturing company in Haryana, they just burned the whole thing, one man died. Now these people were knowing that these machines are the source of my livelihood, why should I damage them? But then that inner sense of identification is lost. Why does a man become a patriot? Oh, I want to give my life for my country. He identifies himself that, oh, there is a debt of gratitude. I was born here. So many emotions are involved. And why does a man become a traitor to his country? You may say, what country, you know, what she has done for me. I was just thinking this also very nicely can be put in spiritual life, where why somebody feels I have to be a devotee of Krishna? Why? And why somebody says, I hate him. I can't stand him. There is no God. What has God done for me? Very simplistically, Prabhupada says, this is a matter of demons and demigods. Right from the beginning of time, dva bhuta sarge lokesmin. Sarge means creation. If at the time of creation there are demons and demigods, and Krishna says, so there is a blame on Krishna. Do you, for the sake of fun, when you make this material world, do you make like that, half the party demons, half party demigods, and then you make them fight against each other? Like I remember in our childhood days, for a cricket team, if there are 18 boys, then there would be two who would be acting like captains. I don't know what is the style in other parts of India, but we would both would hold hands, and one would choose one, other would choose the other. Right? And that's how a team is made, or two teams are made. For another game, another team, like ritual of making two teams. So does Krishna, when he creates this material world, does he create a demon? Like here is Pralambasur. Pralamba means very long. Very, very extraordinary long. That's why he's called Pralamba. And he's an asura. And he's a very talented person. He's a very resourceful person. Very intelligent person. But his intelligence is being used in the service of Kamsa. And that's why he wants to kill Krishna. A hint can be found in the Bhagavad Gita, or many hints. Krishna says, I don't make anybody a deva, I don't make anybody a asura. In fact, nothing in this material world is sort of willed by me. Please have to understand, will in the sense, I want someone to become a millionaire. And the next year, I want him to become a beggar. Krishna says, no. Personally, I'm not happy if he becomes a millionaire. And personally, I don't laugh as to how I've made him fall. Why? That would be cheap. That would be ridiculous. How can somebody who claims to be the father, all-knowing, all-loving father, take this kind of happiness? A normal father won't do that. How many times in a family we see a 10-year-old and he has a younger one, maybe 5 years old, and if he slaps him, the parents take him to task. He is small, how can you not understand? Is it not? So how can Krishna, being the father, still claim that, you know, these demigods and they fight, and what am I supposed to do? There is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where he says, Udasinavad asinam asaktam teshu karmasu. Udasin. Normally, if a person is udasin, we say, what happened?
Why are you so neutral? You can't. You have to take a stance. So these are some confusing points which have confused philosophers, big philosophers, for the last millions of years practically. And the only way out is to hear from authorities. One devotee came to Prabhupada and said, Krishna is too confusing. His character is too confusing. It is difficult for me to understand. So Prabhupada said, you say difficult for you. Krishna is difficult for big scholars to understand. What to speak of you? So if somebody says, oh, I can't understand Krishna, no big deal about it. Big demigods can't understand Krishna. Krishna never says once, I would be happy to see that, because I also have that asuric nature to find some fault, that Krishna says, I bewilder manushyas. Manushyas are never considered even. The Yamadutas, when they ask Vishnudutas, who are you? Are you Deva, Upadeva, Siddha? They never say, are you men from some other part of this world? Ravana, when he wanted a benediction, he never claimed that, save me from men. He said, men? Why fear men? I'll have them for breakfast. What to pick up? So we might say our material world, this particular globe, our achievements, and like Bhakti Vigyan Goswami, he's a chemistry PhD, so he knows what he's talking, and I don't, but I'm just repeating his example. When scientists were thinking that if people from outer space, whoever they are, if they come or they want to know what have we achieved, so we have to provide the best of scientific progress in front of them. So that time, whatever time it was, they selected the double helix, the DNA double helix diagram, as to, this is what we have done, understand? And they started sending those signals, and nothing came. So they said, must be idiots all outside there. They can't even understand. They can't understand what kind of sophisticated technology this is. He said, nobody had the guts or the courage to raise the question, what if they see this and they laugh? What if they see our level of technology and they say, this is so ridiculous, it is not even worth going there. These people are so backward. Just a thought. There is a possibility, isn't it? So, Krishna doesn't take somebody and say, hey, you are a demon from today. No. Simultaneously, he doesn't claim somebody and say, please start to be a demigod. No. In fact, asuras are not even defined, that this makes somebody an asura. He has to have two fangs or particular height, bristly hair, copper red eyes, very gruff voice. No. It says, Vishnu Bhakta Smrto Daiva. If you are a Vishnu Bhakta, you are demigodly or demigod or a candidate for demigod, whatever. And who is an asura? Tad viparyaya. Who is not a Vishnu Bhakta immediately, gradually, finally, but has to come in that category. Today morning a lecture Prabhupada is saying, we have nothing against them, he's talking of Shaivites, but Ravana was a Shiva Bhakta. So what is the end point of somebody becoming a bhakta of demigods? You still end up living with demons or getting their fate. So, being a demigod or a demigod category, like sometimes Prabhupada writes in his purports, all devotees are demigods. The first time I read this, I was very happy. But then he said, what do you mean by demigod? That means those who are servants of Krishna. A demigod doesn't mean he has to have siddhis or he has to have some extraordinary power. One who sees himself in the morning mirror and says, I am a devotee of Krishna. like those devotees who do regular deity worship, you remember that passage we have to read every time? I am an eternal servant of Krishna. Somehow or other, since time immemorial, what I have done? I have identified myself with matter. From how long? Not this life, or since time immemorial. So you may say, okay, you might have identified yourself with matter. What happens after that? Oh, then you get entangled in matter and start suffering the burning threefold miseries. Trivida tap, adidaivik, adibhautik, adhyatmik. Misery is given by your own body. Misery is given by other living entities. Misery is coming by natural cataclysms. What is the way out? Now, as a result of some unimaginable good fortune. Why this good fortune has to be unimaginable? Because the living entity, once in matter, he cannot understand how to get out of it. Radha Govind Maharaj used to give an example. If you have a key or a mobile phone or a watch, and for last 3 days you just don't know where you put it. Now, if that watch is your trademark, every time somebody sees you, he sees that you have a nice watch, and somebody says, hey, where's the watch? Oh, I've lost it. I don't know where. Oh, where's your mobile phone? I've lost it. Where's your key? He lost it. He says, please try to understand. You have the identity of the owner of that particular thing. You know that you have lost it. You haven't found it yet. You don't know where you have put it. But you knew that you lost it. The living entity does not even know that he has lost his connection with Krishna. That's how matter encompasses him completely. So it is not a fact that by one's own efforts, one can say, okay, what's my problem? I'm this body. That's my thinking. That's a problem. Okay, I have these threefold miseries. Okay, and how do I get out? Blank. Completely blank. No book, no siddhis, no tapasya. Nothing in the 14 worlds can help a person on his own dint, on his own prowess, as to how can I conquer this. Why? Because his thinking is material, so his solutions also will be materially infected. We pray that Guru, he opened my eyes with the torchlight or the salve of knowledge. Gyan Anjana Shalakaya. Sometimes the word torchlight, torch is used, mashal, flame. But the real word is shalaka. Shalaka is a small stick. And there is a eye lotion, you get that stick with it. It's made of glass. Previously it was made of wood. With that you put the eye anjan. Gyan anjan. Gyan anjan shalakaya. Chakshur unmilitam. Till the time a guru, he doesn't interfere in a living entity's life, he is not supposed to claim that I even had knowledge. That knowledge is also considered avidya, which puts you in the mode of an enjoyer. Even that knowledge is not considered knowledge. There is absence of that knowledge, which is avidya of avidya. Like in the material world, somebody may say he's a fool. He doesn't understand computers. So, okay. Or someone doesn't understand how to use a mobile phone. So he's a fool. But even if you know how to make your own mobile phone, still you are a fool if you don't understand how to get out of this material illusion. So asuras come in various shapes, forms, size, pattern, package, you name it. They are everywhere, And in this age, Kali especially, they are all within us. That mentality is all within us. Only when a jiva identifies himself as, I have this connection with Krishna. Now how do I develop it? How do I come in Krishna's presence? This verse is phenomenal in its scope as to what devotees can do with Krishna. We'll come to that soon. But our typical problems that how do I see Krishna? Or has anybody seen Krishna? Prabhupada once explained, why such inordinate pressure on just one sense organ? Why? You have other organs, ears, tongue. Vedic literature doesn't just tell you that seeing Krishna is the be all and end all. Prabhupada says you can taste Krishna. You can hear Krishna. I was amazed that particular class, Prabhupada simply goes on becoming more and more magnanimous and more sort of, he's becoming so broad-minded in what is the meaning of coming in the presence of Krishna. Like if I have to come in your presence, I would call you up and say, how about a meeting? Can we meet here? Can we meet there? Only when we physically meet, we say, okay, that was a meeting. Of course, today we have video conferencing, Skype calls, and so many other ways we try to make up for that loss where we can't meet physically. But please try to understand, if you are having a Skype conference and you don't see the person, you immediately say, hey, I can't see you. But you can hear me. Oh, but I can't see you. Because I want to see you and now I can't. So there is this, or if I can hear you, but I can't, if I can see you, but I can't hear you, then also the expectation was it has to be both. Prabhupada explains Krishna is absolute. He comes one level down. If you have no access to Krishna, like we all, we can't say we have access to Krishna's personal presence. He says Krishna's fame is absolute. When devotees come and discuss, Krishna did this on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he did that on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he did this in Dwarka, he did this in Vrindavan. That fame, he says 5,000 years have passed and still people are discussing about him. How famous this person is. That fame also means you are in Krishna's personal presence. Now these are my thoughts as I am here in this lecture. Okay, so seeing Krishna face to face, if not that, hearing about Krishna's activities, then Prabhupada comes even lower than that. I can't say lower exactly, but I am saying like somebody becoming more open, let's put it like that, becoming more open or more available. Prabhupada said you can discuss the lives of Krishna's unalloyed devotees and be in Krishna's presence. He specifically gives the example of six Goswamis. He said we can discuss them. Narad Muni can discuss them. Even when you are discussing Narad Muni's life story, the great activities of the six Goswamis, he says you are in Krishna's presence. And of course I thought for all of us, even to discuss Prabhupada's leelas of spreading Krishna consciousness everywhere, why, like sometimes we may hear the same thing and we may say, oh, I have heard it. That's my material understanding. But whenever somebody says, oh, Prabhupada came to San Francisco and he did this, still there is some kind of freshness in that. It gives a boost. It gives you that joy. Why? Prabhupada's promise. If you discuss anything about somebody who is an unalloyed devotee of Krishna, You are in Krishna's presence. So, Krishna's presence, nobody is bereft of that, provided he has the link with a pure devotee spiritual master. And Prabhupada did that. Here we are hearing demigods, Deva, Gopala Rupino. Demigods used to disguise themselves as members of the cowherd community. They were so attracted. I once asked this query that sometimes we think demigods are all busy with their sense gratification, and how come they shower flowers or they see Krishna Leela. Sometimes it is very durlabh, you can't see Krishna Leela. Normally just the word Deva is used, but specifically to understand, not all demigods can do this. There are few who have that understanding that this all is temporary. We want to make a solution to this. The lowest category of demigods are those who have just opened some dispensaries, schools, colleges, whatever, planted some trees, given some free food, and they are like, let me go now and let the dance begin, now let the music begin. So they are not interested in anything higher than that. That particular category is Kshine Punya Martyalokam Vishanti. They go there. Radha Govind Maharaj again, he cites some Puranic reference. The moment you enter a demigod's planet, you are given a nice garland. Your entry level recognition. And you find that this garland is so nice, it is ever fresh. And maybe after 2 million years, you find that one particular flower is a bit dry. It has withered away. And you may say, all right, you know, like you see one hair turning white, you might just tuck it under many others or just pull it out. Pull out the rebel one. After again few thousands of years, one more, one more, one more. Finally, you can't hide it anymore. And everybody start looking at that person as if his time is up. Now, he doesn't really fade away in youth or whatever. It just his time is not, I mean, his time is running out. What happens when all the flowers wither away? Practically at some point of time, unknown, unseen by others, he is just transported to a physical place. So nobody dies on the demigod's planet. Everybody lives there continuously. Their label is intact, Amara. Nobody dies here. But the fact is, those who are supposed to die, they are not allowed to stay there. They are transferred to some other place. From there they die. And then Kshine Punya Martyalokam Vishanti. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that through rains or through many other avenues, they can come down. Now this soul is bereft of all his pious activities. Not a very difficult example to understand. Somebody wins. That day I saw, I don't know which particular news item. Someone was a paraplegic, that means he cannot walk, and he earned millions of dollars in a lottery ticket, first prize. What is he going to do with that? Normally in America, the statistics is a millionaire who becomes a millionaire only on lotteries, in 3 or 4 years he comes back to normal, because he just got the money. He doesn't have the art of keeping money. There is an art of earning money and there is an art of retaining it, and both are two distinct objects. So this person, let's say somebody has earned millions of rupees, whatever, he goes to Oberoi, Trident, whatever, hotel, 30-40 thousand rupees a day,
and then throws lavish parties. Day in, day out, they are enjoying. And one day he is told that tomorrow will be your last day. So when you see him in the streets, you find that, you know, he had that money, but now the same person. So similarly, in fact, all of us may have been many times over these kind of demigods and come back. Mahaprabhu says, Brahmanda Brahmita. The living entity simply rotates throughout the universe. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, sometimes up, sometimes down. These devas, they are the special ones. They know who Krishna is. They are very attracted. They are willing to take Gopala Vesh. Just like when Sita Thakurani, she decided to visit the birth, celebrate the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Many other demigoddesses came. In fact, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi would be surprised. How so many people come to our house? And what they do? And why they are celebrating? Why they are so happy seeing this newborn baby? These are the fortunate demigods. In a sense, they have a sense of duty. They have a sense of purpose. And they are not happy where they are. There is a reference to this in the 9th canto, I think. Yeah. Where they say, we would like to take birth in the homes of your devotees, my Lord. So that from the very beginning of our life, and Prabhupada says, all parents, please note, you should be bringing up your children as if they are these demigods who have requested to Krishna, please give us Vaishnav parents and we can get a proper Vaishnav upbringing. Prabhupada used to say, I was fortunate that my father, right from an age where I could barely hold the mridanga, and he had a mridanga teacher come and teach me. Abhay Charan, as he was called, his arms would barely reach the ends of the mridang. And his mother would say, why such an early age? He said, no, it's important. So just look at this. Prabhupada's father said, this learning mridanga is more important. There's a DVD where Prabhupada is playing mridang and he just makes a beat and says, my father wanted me to learn this. One uncle wanted me to go to London and become a barrister. And Prabhupada's father said, no. He will just learn how to smoke, drink and chase women. He would pray to any sadhu, please bless my son to be a servant of Radharani. That's why Prabhupada had so much gratitude for his father. He called him a pure devotee. Krishna book is dedicated to him. To my father, Gaur Mohande, a pure devotee of Krishna. So some demigods, those are the most fortunate ones, they couldn't resist. Now Krishna Lila is not some kind of a street corner dance where you can just go and do something and come back. It takes how much sukriti, how much punya, how much pious activity it takes to enter in. Shukadeva Swami doesn't name the price, but he just says that these boys who are playing with Krishna, Krita Punya Punja. In Sanskrit, a capitalist is called Punji. Capitalist is called Punji. So Hindi word for capitalist is Punjivadi. Somebody who has a lot of money. So these are spiritual capitalists. Krishna Leela, his Bal Leela, is like a playground of the super, super spiritually rich people. They are phenomenal. Like there is a millionaire's club, there's a billionaire's club, where to enter the club, you have to be a billionaire first. And then you have to retain that for some years. And then they make you a full-fledged member. Why this exclusivity? Because they say, well, people of a class come here. So Krishna's friends, they are also spiritually
spiritually rich billionaires. But what is their capital? What is their resource? Purity of service. They are so pure, they don't want anything from Krishna. There is no material benefit that they are seeking. They plainly want to love him. And Krishna allows. Sakya Ras is a very, very bona fide Ras. We find that in our lives, this verse, the second verse, which had the purport, this is what the demigod saw. Krishna and Balaram. Now, Krishna and Balaram would know that this person is a demigod. Doesn't mean that, you know, Krishna says, hey, suddenly our friends, how the group increased so much. He knows everything. But he allows them. It's all right. Like, there is a description of how Maharaj Parikshit, when he was sitting for hearing 7 days, everybody and their uncle came to give advice. Somebody said, let this king go for hunting. I'm just saying, the Bhagavatam doesn't mention exactly, but everybody has come and saying, oh, only 7 days to live. What can you do? You know, which TV play to watch and what to eat, where to go, which resort or what? No. At that time, people were saying, Gyan, please understand how this world is all ephemeral and maybe that will help. Somebody said yoga, somebody said this. There was a bunch of demigods with Amrit Kalash, that pot of nectar. And it seems Shukdev Goswami said, who are these? They said, some demigods have come from Swargalok and they said that Bhagavat Kathamrit is going to be liberally distributed here on the banks of the Ganga. So, we have come with some Swarga Amrit. So what? Give this to the king. We are sure that his death will be put off by many, many, many millions of years. Guaranteed. And then what? And please let us hear Bhagavat Kathamrit from you. And you know what Shukdev Goswami said? Kick them out first. What was their offense? They were just, they presume that everybody likes what we like. Like if somebody is a cigar smoker, he may go to him and say, like to have one? He may say, no, thanks. Cigar, bhai. One of the best. So he doesn't know that somebody who doesn't smoke or doesn't drink, the best or worst are both the same, isn't it? So what Shukdev Goswami was against was their mentality. You claim that this nectar which enables you to enjoy sense gratification and become more entangled in matter, in exchange for that, you want to hear Bhagavat? So first of all, why did you go to those planets? That's a mistake, isn't it? So therefore he said, kick them out. So from, we don't know what, but that nectar, Prabhupada gave it freely, his books. He just said, giving Bhagavatam is my goal. In fact, he related to one devotee, honestly speaking, I didn't want to go to this material world. So the devotee made a face as if, what would have happened to us? Prabhupada said, no, Krishna forced me. And then he said, at least go give these books and then you can come. So again, we don't have any right to have Srimad Bhagavatam. It is just some unimaginable good fortune that this Bhagavatam is made available. And in that we are reading, Krishna acting just like look at his activities, Brahmanair, single boy or a single sakha whirling around himself and feeling dizzy and just, you know, crashing somewhere or hugging a tree or whatever. I'm sure we have seen in our dancing, we can see. It's not a very difficult thing to understand. Langhanair, jumping over somebody. Kshepair, throwing somebody. Asphotan,
slapping, vikarshanai, drag somebody, chikradatur, they played like this, niyuddhena. Here yuddha doesn't mean a fight, it's a mock fight, playful fight. The Supreme Lord Prabhupada used to again and again say, is the source of all emotions. He enjoys them to the fullest. Just like Mother Yashoda churning butter, that is the emblem for those who want to relish Vatsalya Ras. Krishna's playful acting, these games, this slapping, throwing, this is the emblem for those who want to relish Sakhya Ras. This Sakhya Ras, friendship mood, becomes so overwhelming, so overwhelming. Krishna feels dependent on these friends. There are instances where mother is calling and say, Krishna, come. And Krishna says, I have to leave, my mother is calling. And the friends look at him and say, one more instance you do this, tomorrow will not allow you. He comes back. He comes back. So the Bhagavatam actually explains, for a neophyte like me, all the time to see, depend on Krishna, increase your dependence on Krishna, cultivate your dependence on Krishna. It sounds like big homework. It sounds like bitter. It sounds like a big struggle. But the struggle is not on Krishna. The struggle is me and my own ego. My ego says, I can take care of it. I know this world. I am here for a long time. I can take care of it. And Bhagavatam says, precisely that's the reason why I can't trust you, because you are here for a long time. So this dependence on Krishna is the biggest obstacle. And somehow or other, we have to overcome it. And what do we see when we overcome this? Only to find Krishna super dependent on his devotees. It's not like Vaikuntha Loka is a place where Krishna reminds you all the time, so who's God? Huh? Who's God? Me? All right, good. The next day again, so who's God? No, that's not like it. That would be torturous. This place is much better than that. Why material world sometimes appears to be a place where you are relieved? At least nobody is telling me who is God and, you know, I can be my own God. But real Vaikuntha, Golok Vrindavan, play. There is no homework. Young people who were harassed by the American government, come fight in the Vietnam War. Come do this, do this, do this. So one devotee said, Prabhupada, what exactly is Vaikuntha life? Prabhupada said, no draft board. No one tell you that you have to fight. Of course, he made it relative. Like Burijan Prabhu has this example of somebody asking, what exactly is Vaikuntha bliss? Prabhupada said, it's like an ocean of LSD. He said, oh, one blow or one shot and you feel high for 2 hours. Ocean, that means, how can you digest it? So these are sometimes Prabhupada has to, the analogy giver has to come down to the level of the person, the recipient of knowledge, and explain accordingly. But this fact is seen when Krishna is bound to a mortar in Vatsalya Ras. Yashoda Mai has bound him. At the same time, what is he thinking? Okay, this episode is over now. She's bound me. I have to deliver these two trees. They are long standing. That's an account I have to settle. My devotee Narad Muni has told these two brothers, you'll be born as trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. They're long standing account I have to clear now. Somehow or other, he goes through so many obstacles, liberates them. You may say, why can't he liberate himself? For that, his friends cannot help him. He has to ask Nanda Maharaj, please untie me. So the acharyas explain, this is how he shows his total dependence on his devotees. For liberating you and me, he is quite capable. But for his own rasa, he is dependent on his devotees. And his depending on his devotees is his biggest opulence. And that's what make Vaikuntha life what it is. Hare Krishna. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Radha Gopinath ki, Itai Gaur Premanande.